Welcome to the Costume Plot.
I'm JoJo Siu.
And I'm Sarah Tim. We're professional designers with a passion for costume design and the performing arts. Our podcast does contain spoilers. Accompanying slideshows for each movie are linked in the episode description.
We hope you'll join us every other week as we delve into the wonderful world of costume design in the Costume Plot. Welcome back, everyone, to our podcast. It's been a little while. Feels like it's been ages.
That happens every time.
We are so excited because the first of this month, we do have a guest back. I'm going to let Sarah introduce her, but it's always nice to have repeat guests. So
she's our first repeat guest, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, she's been on previously to talk about her work on Upload, but she's here today to talk about her work on, of course, the new Netflix show Avatar: The Last Airbender. Please welcome Farnaz Khaki Sadiq.
Hi, guys. Welcome Thank you back. For having me back.
Thank course. You for being willing to come back.
Yeah. We love hearing from you. So exciting to have you back.
I'm very excited to be back. So it's been definitely a wild ride since last we spoke.
I was going to say we sort of briefly made mention of it on the last episode, but it's cool to see it come full circle and now on the other side of the trenches. You've come back to talk about what your process was like, which is really exciting.
Sounds good.
So I'll start with our first question. I know, obviously, there's a huge fan following for this show. So that's always something that you take into account as a costume designer because you're trying to recreate something that already exists and has a following. And then sort of translating that into what a real life kind of actual fantastical world looks like. So my first question, of course, is how did you translate or how did you come up with ways to still honor the original series and still be able to make it your own design?
I mean, first I had to learn all about the kind of like the inspirational aspects of like the worlds. So what the worlds were based on. You know, the animation takes so much inspiration from like the Asian culture, the indigenous cultures, like, you know, a lot of like Southeast Asia, East Asia, some Central Asia references. So there's a lot of like already like references that are in the animation towards that. And then there's also like a time period as well, because it's like, it's references like mid-1800s to late-1800s. So I had to like really go back and just understand and really learn about, you know, the cultures, the history of it, what was going on during those time periods, what influences, you know, were there like to affect, you know, trade routes, you know, availability of certain materials. You know, learn about like how those materials moved, what would be the best materials to use for movement. All of that stuff took me a good chunk of my time to kind of like, it felt kind of going back to school again. So once I've kind of done that, then I was taking like, you know, started off with kind of like basically doing like concepts for the general, like, you know, each different, you know, the nation. So like the water nation, the air nation, the fire nation, the earth nation, like they each kind of needed their own overall world to be created. So once I kind of like try and kind of like, okay, well, this is where taking inspiration for, the air nomads from like all kinds of like, you know, Tibetan monks, Japanese monks, Vietnamese monks, you know, there are different, looks and color palettes there. So, and there are different silhouettes. So taking those and then kind of creating the world of the air nomads and then, understanding, okay, well, air nomads, they are they live a simple life. You know, they don't believe in, like, you know, like they believe in, like, you know, being, you know, loving everything and not killing anything, and just, you know, they have a vegetarian diet. So just all of those things and taking that into consideration. And it's like, okay, so all the materials is going to be natural fibers and anything that kind of is organic and not, you know, an animal byproduct there. Mm-hmm. And then figuring out their color palette from that, which we went with more like the fall colors, and just kind of pulling, you know, different shades from that into their world. Once their world was created in general, then I went in and just kind of like pulled looks, you know, and tried to kind of like narrow it down for each character based on the character's personalities. And again, just like trying to kind of like reference their look and what they were in the end, like, you know, what was illustrated for them in the animation, and then try to kind of combine the two together to create both an homage to the animation as well as to create, to be on, you know, on par with like what the real version of it would look like. So.
Yeah, and I was going to say, as someone who did watch the show pretty religiously with my husband, it was cool to see how you translated, you know, the colors and still kept some of that spirit of the anime, I think. And that was one thing Sarah and I talked a lot about, was there's definitely a little bit of corniness to the show, almost like overkill. But I feel like a lot of the characters that I remembered, you really captured that spirit very well.
I think one of the things that we had discussed sort of like early on with like the, you know, with the creative team and also like, you know, like the executives and the directors, is the fact that like we didn't want to tone it down to a point of like muting everything out. Right. So we still wanted to keep the vibrancy and of that. And also, like, if you look at a lot of the Asian cultures and even the indigenous cultures, there's so much vibrancy in what they wear and what you know, they create, like what in their life, like overall, like, you know, so we didn't really want to dull that down to mute it and make everything like super dark or super neutral per se. So
I think that can be the danger sometimes of filtering out color as well for a costume designer. Sometimes it gets so muddled that you lose some of that.
Well, these days I feel like everything is so dark and gritty, you know, like even superhero movies, which is like the idea of a superhero is so fun, but like we've made them so dark and just like desaturated. And
it's true. And it's also like with the lighting too, like, you know, they just kind of like underlight everything. So everything sort of like fades away. And sometimes it's really hard. Like you just have to like, you know, brighten your screen. And even when you brighten your screen, it's still really dark to see, and you can't see a lot of the silhouettes. And
I did love how colorful everything was in this show. It was very, very refreshing to see.
I will say one of my favorites of your costumes was all the armor for the Fire Nation. I meant to ask you, but I mean, because we do love leather and all kinds of textures we've talked about in the past on our podcast, but I was curious about some of the materials that you used for all the little just metal, like just squares on their armor, and all the leather work that you did for that.
Yeah. So everything is leather. It's either like stenciled or laser cut or,
amazing.
You know, like there's the star, panels, which is like actually like interwoven leather with, and then, secured with rivets on there. We wanted it to be sort of authentic to the time period. And which is like, it's actually like they're based on Japanese samurai armors and some of the Chinese armors.
I was just gonna ask.
A lot of that, they use like leather and leather lacing, and there's very little metal on them. So we definitely wanted to kind of like just keep it to the leather. You see a little bit more metal on the Earth Nation armors, which is reference based on like Indian and South East Asian armor references and Central Asia, armor references from like, 1600 to 1800. Mm-hmm. And those have a bit more metal on them because they did actually use metal in their armors in real life. So
very cool. It's cool that it's grounded in such reality. Yeah. It's still giving us a very authentic and vibrant feel.
Yeah. I love hearing about like the real world inspirations, because obviously this is like a fantasy world that you're creating.
Absolutely. Like it is a fantasy world, but it's still like, inspired by, real life and real life cultures. And so we wanted to make sure that we kind of kept it culturally accurate and respectful in any way references that we used.
Mm-hmm. Segueing off of that, I would love to know what, if there was specific tribal inspiration for the Water Nation, specifically like the ones who are from, Wolf Cove and stuff. They all look very Alaskan to me.
Yeah, so the Southern Water Tribe is very much inspired by Inuit culture as well as like the Alaskan indigenous culture as well. We did take references from Scandinavian indigenous cultures for that as well. I was very fortunate and very honored to talk to some Inuit elders and kind of get some historical backgrounds from them.
Wow.
And ask as many questions as I could. We also got to work with a lot of like very talented Inuit artists for like, that they did a lot of the trim and beadwork and all the, like a lot of the headdresses for the Northern Water Tribe as well, was done by them. So we did a lot of back and forth with them and making sure that we ran everything by them. And, they did a lot of trades and they did have like, trades with other indigenous cultures and as well as like indigenous tribes, as well as, the settlers that were coming in at that time period. So there is like a lot of like that references in there as well. So we kind of like brought that in to it. With the Northern Water Tribe, we still reference the Inuit aspect of it. However, we also looked at a lot of like the Siberian indigenous cultures, and tribes. So some of them would be, the Yupik tribes and like the Turk tribes and the Yakuts tribes. They were all kind of like the inspiration behind the Northern, because they're a little bit more elaborate in their look in comparison to the Southern Water Tribe.
I was going to say that was one of the things I noticed first on all their costumes, was all the beautiful trim work that you had.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of those were done, by a bunch of really, really, really talented Inuit artists that we were fortunate to like work with, which, amazing. It was an honor.
So now, were you guys local in that area to meet those people, or did you end up calling them in from somewhere specific?
We're not local to them because I'm like in Vancouver. And so I'm like, quite, 2.5 hours away from Seattle. So not very close. And a lot of, a lot of them live in the northern parts of Canada or Alaska. So we tried to kind of contact, the indigenous communities that are local to the Vancouver, Squamish, and, Whistler area and the Vancouver Island area. And through them, we got connected with people that are in those tribes in the northern parts of Canada and in Alaska, and sort of like connections and a lot of like phone tags and them contacting them for us. And then we, they reached out to us and going like, yes, we can help. So yeah, it was it was really nice. And it was really nice to sort of like be able to talk and learn firsthand of their culture.
I feel like that's a resource we don't talk a lot about as costume designers, is all the people that we come in contact with just to do our research.
Yeah.
Because it really is such a difference between a primary source versus like reading it from a book or finding it on the internet, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very cool.
Well, yeah. It's important to do, if you're borrowing from someone's culture, it's definitely important to like Absolutely. Do it, you know, that way instead of just
do it right.
And even anything that we did in house for the Water Tribe, like any trims that I designed personally, like, you know, for example, like Katara's or Sokka's and even Grand's were done in house because we wanted to sort of like have a bit more control over it. Mm-hmm. So that it could be kind of referenced to the animation a little bit more. Once they were designed, I would send them out to one of our artists and one of our elders and just kind of go, okay, do I need to change anything? You know, did I get the artwork correct? You know, is the line, you know, do we have to like, you know, change any like of the line work, you know, to make sure that it fits in with the Inuit arts. Mm-hmm. And, the actual like Inuit trims and then they would give me feedback on it and we would make the adjustments accordingly. So
that's so cool.
Yeah. So even that was like, you know, we did a lot of kind of like sending it back and forth to make sure that whatever even we designed in the in-house was correct
right.
culturally.
Right. Yeah. So.
I love that.
That's great.
I love that.
Yeah.
I had one other question. I think because, you know, especially working on a TV series, there's always the difference in directors because you don't often have one director working on, or I shouldn't say often, but you don't always have one director working on every episode of a series, depending. So working with some of the slightly different directors that you had on this project, what was that like from I guess, episode to episode when you were trying to create consistent characters that walked through each of the episodes for the vision?
So we did like each director did two episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, so we had a total of four directors on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, we kind of like a couple of them, like Michael Goy, who did the first two episodes, and Roseanne, who did the third block, which is episode 5 and 6, you know, they're executive producers, so they were involved from like beginning on. Mm-hmm. So we had a good conversation. So they were involved in like the original like concepts. And then we had a good amount of time with like Jabbar and our last director as well, like, you know, to where they, you know, they started early enough that we could kind of like I would run them through like the concepts that we had already established and discussed, and then what we talked about for the upcoming, and then the feedback would come in from them as well. And we tried to kind of incorporate what their vision was as well within their blocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was nice to have such a seamless transition still, even with four different directors.
Yeah. I mean, with any series though, like we never have the same director
right.
doing all of it. I think I've only done ever one series, which was, I think, Space Force, where we had one director for all 7 episodes and we sort of like shot it like a feature and mm-hmm. it just basically like, we established everything like right off the bat. But yeah, otherwise it's like every series is like, we're always dealing with a different director, and usually we have like the creative executives and, you know, the showrunner gets the final say, and we try and incorporate the director's visions in there where we can, but a lot of times we go to the executives mm-hmm. first.
Yeah. Sarah, did you have another question?
Yeah, we talked a bit about adapting from animation, and I just want to know like what some of the sort of unique challenges came about as a result of adapting from animation.
There's a lot of challenges, because with animation you can get away with anything, you know. Yeah. It's like there's no limitations, but once you take the garment and you have to put it on an actual person, you really have to think about how it would fit and their movements and some of the things that are like, you know, in the animation doesn't really work in real life on a person or on any, you know, even on sets as well. Like it's not realistic enough for it to be like functional and actually be able to like work in the same manner as it does in the animation. So there's a lot of challenges in that. And this is like such an action heavy show. So the weight of everything mattered. You couldn't make anything like super heavy because then they wouldn't move properly and they would weigh down the stunts and the actors down, like, you know, so take away from their movement. So, and then with the bending as well, like, that added another layer into it. With, for example, like Aang's look, we went through so many different fabrics, not only just to find the right color, but to find the right sort of like weight and texture where it wouldn't read too flat. It, felt organic enough to fit in within the Air Nomad world. And then, it had enough flow and movement to work with his airbending. And then flexibility and elasticity for him to actually be able to like move and kick and do all of the things that he needed to do. Right. So it was definitely a big challenge in that sense of trying to kind of like making it something come to life from animation. It's really just figuring out, okay, well, how does that work on a person, on a body? Like, you know, their arms have to be able to like move a certain way and, you know, your arm in, whereas, you know, some of the armors that, like the Fire Nation armors, like the shoulders in the animation are drawn in a way like that doesn't work in reality. And you have to kind of like adjust to make sure it's like, okay, well, we need to have movement in the arms so that they can move and bend and fight. So we had to change a lot of that around as well to make sure that it worked.
Yeah, that makes sense. People who draw animation are not thinking about like, well, where are the closures? You know, like, is it stretchy? They're just like, that looks cool.
How do you get into that? And how does that stay on even? Like, you know, there's certain lines where you kind of go, it's like, well, how does that work? Because I don't think that'll stay on that way. So it's a lot of adjustments to make sure that it actually works with a real body.
Yeah, I was gonna say even the leather work for Azula, I was looking at like her, you know, how you have everything shaped up, and like that is so difficult to move in if you don't have it exactly right and in the right place. So like, yeah, people don't realize how even though it looks so effortless, you know, that it is so much work to like really engineer that, and it really is engineering to a certain extent that we have to figure out.
I mean, we did a lot of mock-ups, like, you know, we would do a muslin version and then do like a one that was cut out of like vegetan and just kind of just to get the shape of it correctly, and then we would cut the real thing. And, you know, because we just had to make sure that it actually functioned properly before we cut it out of the real material. And, you know, we didn't want to have to like redo too many versions of out of the real material.
Yeah, right. You don't want to waste that.
No.
And can you explain, just for some of our listeners who don't know, what vegetan is?
Vegetan is basically raw leather. Like, there's no dye or color to it. And it comes in different weights. So in ounces, and you can mold it and shape it and cut it to whatever you want. It's easy to like water mold it and heat mold it to sort of like give it the shape that you want. But we use it sort of like where we use like a canvas for fabric muslins and fabric mock-ups. We use vegetin for leather mock-ups, and, you know, so basically our
dyeing process.
before it gets dyed or before it gets cut up at a, like, you know, actual dyed or printed leather. So
Very cool.
Nice.
I think going along with that too, there you can tell that there is some CG obviously with this show, as there has to be with all the bending and whatnot that needed to happen. But did any of the CG kind of cross into any of the costumes as well? Did you have to do any of that collaboration with the CG team?
Well, we had to get everything scanned. So everything that we made got digitally scanned by our VisFX team. So on the actor, off the actor, like every piece was like single, you know, scanned. And then it was scanned on the actor in different layers just to kind of capture all of it just for like the motion. Some of them like got scanned several times. Also like the different stages, because you know, we start cleaner and by the time we get to the end we are quite broken down in the show, just to kind of like show the process of the journey. But you know, at every stage of breakdown it would have to get rescanned just so that we could match digital versus you know, real. So that had a lot to do with the firebending. They used some light adherence onto their palms to kind of track the bending. And that sort of like worked out because we had to like create sort of like some pockets in some of the armors and to hide the battery packs and without it showing. Oh, gosh. It's a lot of like, little things that you have to kind of like take into consideration. But yeah, like it's, there's a lot of crossovers between departments in this one. So
very cool.
Yeah. That's something I like didn't even think about, that like it would have to, that you would have to hide battery packs.
And make it still look like there's nothing there.
Well, battery packs, mic packs, you know, we always have to kind of create like a little spot for them. It's always the worst when you kind of like, you know, an actor turns around and you see the big square battery pack in the back because, you know, their dress is too tight or so it's like, so we always try to kind of find the best spot where we can hide without it showing. Luckily we had a lot of layers, so it was easy.
That's great. So kind of deviating a little bit from this, I know we had kind of mentioned this would come up, but because we've had you on our show with Upload, can you just talk a little bit about how your process was different? Because obviously they're two very different types of shows, but how your process either approaching it or even going through it was different for both shows.
I mean, I think it really comes down to the research and the character development when it comes to the different shows. You know, just understanding the character and creating the characters. And then it really comes down to, like, you know, how you approach your research and how you approach what you're looking into when you're trying to create that character arc. For me, that's basically where it varies show to show, and my research materials for it. It's, you know, the process to me is not very different in that sense, but like, you know, it's also like finding the right crew because you need different skills for different projects. So for this project, we needed a lot of people who had like, you know, cutting skills, as well as like, you know, we needed a lot more like stitchers that had experience with like leather and different materials. And, you know, that they had period garment, you know, capability, because, you know, it's very different than altering a contemporary clothing. You know, so, you know, even with like sewing corsets and, you know, sewing period garment, it's very, very different than, you know, sewing a contemporary jacket. So the skill sets were different. We also needed a lot of people who were able to do like leather work and had the skills to do leather carving and leather, you know, molding and shaping and all of that stuff. We had people who had skills in like dyeing fabrics, because we had to dye a lot of fabrics and we had to texturize a lot of things. We had to dye leather, so that's a separate skill that you need. Mm-hmm. So it's just finding the right people for the right project. That also is another way that it varies from show to show. So you don't always need the same kind of like skills, but
that's great.
Great. Jumping off of that, I did want to ask, like, what you think are important qualities of people when you put together your team? Like, what makes a successful team, you know?
For me, it's one of the biggest things is teamwork. Mm-hmm. It's really important that my team is able to, like, work well together and that they work as a team. I don't encourage, like, individualism. Kind of like in a sense when you're in a work environment. I have a sign at my desk that says, like, do not talk. Like, it just basically, it's like, you know, I don't want to hear that this is not my job. You know, we all do what we can to make it happen. Like, especially when it comes to the crunch time, you know, there is no sort of like, you know, it's like, well, I'm the designer. I can't, you know, that's not my job, or I'm the assistant, I don't do that, or that's below me, or anything like that. We, you know, if somebody needs help, we all get in there and get our hands dirty. And that's really important to me for my team, to know that I have their backs. And I will kind of like, I went in on weekends and I sewed and I cut and I was in breakdown, helping with breakdown. And, you know, like, I have no problems, like, you know, doing that. And I want the rest of my team to be able to, like, you know, step in where they're needed and not have that sort of like, well, I can't do that. That's not my responsibility. You know, it's the show overall is our responsibility and we work as a team. And so teamwork is very important to me. And then communication is the other thing, is the fact that it's like, I would like everybody to, like, sort of like know everything, even if it's not part of their department or it's not part of their thing, it's good for them to know what's going on. We had basically weekly meetings with, like, each, like, I had over 96 people on my team on this show. So it was a huge team. So we had different, basically, like, department heads that were in charge of each of, like, the departments within our department.
Yeah.
And we would have, like, weekly meetings, sometimes twice a week, like, either on, like, a Monday or a Friday, and then, or just the Monday, just to kind of go over what needed to happen that week so that everybody knew what was going on with every single department. And what was on their plate and when it needed to be ready and, like, you know, what they needed from each other, what they needed from me and my assistants to do, you know. So we just really wanted to make sure that the communication got through, especially when you're that many people. Things can get really quickly lost in translation and the information can get lost. So communication is really important. Even if you're on a smaller team, it's still, communication is important. It's good for everybody to know everything that's going on. So that, you know, people get sick, family things happen. If one of us has to step in to cover for somebody else, at least we know what, you know, where they're at and what they're doing. And we don't have to bother them like 15 times a day going like, where is this? And what'd you do with this? And, you know, instead they can have the day to deal with whatever it is that they need to deal with. And we can kind of like take over for them and do what needs to be done on that day. So those are my two key things that I look for.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
We always want to have a fun environment. We all get along, you know, we are all, you know, most of us are actually friends outside of work and we hang out outside of work. So it's just, it's very like, you know, I try to keep it chill.
As chill as can be with it.
As chill as it can be without it. Yeah. without the fast pace. Yeah.
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 I think that's something I guess I can't speak for Sarah, but at least for me, I feel like that's something so special about being in this industry, is it really is forming a family with the people you work with, especially good people that you know you want to work with again. You sort of hold on to it, to like those people.
Most of my team, like my core team, has been with me over 7 years. So that's how close we are. So I try to keep them and take them with me show to show where I can. So, and I mean, they stick around, so I must be doing something right.
That's so true. Cool. I feel like it makes a big difference for the people you're working with too. You know, when they find people they like to stick with the same team as well. So it makes sense.
I mean, we always like to bring in new people too. Like, I mean, we have to give other people a chance as well. But, you know, it is a very, like, my core group is my core group that I've been with for a long time. So,
There's definitely a shorthand that comes with that.
Yeah.
I think in the best situations, it can kind of feel like summer camp, because you're all just like together every day, like working together.
And hours. We're together for like at least 12, if not, you know, 14, 15, 16 hours a day, sometimes weekends. And, you know, you kind of like don't want to get sick of people.
Yeah, if you don't like each other, that can be a real disaster.
You can
be
find out real intense. Fast.
Yeah.
Totally. And now, how long was the entire process for this for you? From
interview to me getting the job to starting to finishing, and then starting reshoots and finishing that. Probably, I would say 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And close to 2 years. I mean, even during this last year, like, you know, like there was a lot of like couple times where like VisFX needed to rescan things. So we had to go and pull, and there was emails going back and forth. But yeah, overall, close to 2 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's a big, that's a lot of time.
It is a lot of time. Yeah. Time limit. Yeah.
But it shows. Very it cool. shows yes. that it's like on the screen, you can see the quality of work, and that kind of quality doesn't come quickly. You know, like,
yeah,
that's
true.
That takes,
and you don't want to rush it either, right? Yeah. Like, it's such a big project that you just don't. You know, if you rush it, it would read as that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it needs to sort of like stew.
Very true. Yeah.
I love it.
Did you have any other final questions? I think those were most of the questions I had.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, since we already asked you about your background in the last one, I thought it might be fun to ask what advice you would give your younger self, like just starting out in this business.
Don't give up. There are tough days. There are days where you feel like, you know, walking away, but don't give up. It's worth it. I don't know. It's like, I mean, like I said before, it's like, I've sort of like known since I was 11, this is what I want to do. So I've sort of like directed myself towards what I've wanted my entire life. So it's just, there are tough times where you kind of like don't think that, you know, you're going to get there. And that you're putting the effort in and you're not seeing the results that you want, you just have to kind of like keep pushing through and just kind of keep manifesting and keep going for it. And just know that at some point it will all pay off and it'll all happen and you'll get there. You know, it's, you know, miracles don't happen overnight. Sometimes they do, but most of the times, like, everything takes time, you know, and every time everything takes, you know, patience. So patience is, yeah. I mean, with Avatar, like, I was such a big fan of the show. I mean, I still am a big, huge fan of the animation. Like, and when they announced they wanted to do the live action, it was pretty much 4 years before I got the job. And I, like, as soon as they announced it, I'm like, that is the show I want to work on. Like, I want to be on that show. And kept following it, trying to see where it would land. And then finally, like, you know, actually getting an interview for it, like getting my resume and getting my interview for it and getting the job. It was just literally like a dream come true. So, but it does happen. You can manifest it.
That was so cool. That's really encouraging. Yeah. I love to hear that.
Yeah.
So, I know. Yeah. Definitely an encouraging thing for our listeners too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's like I say, like, be patient, don't give up, and keep putting it out there. It does happen. And it, you know, yeah, very just have to be patient.
Amazing. I love it. But,
thank you, Farnaz. That's great.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking with you guys. So,
yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. I think that's a good place to end for us.
Yeah, that was a really so happy uplifting note to end on.
Well, glad. Anytime you guys want to chat, I would be happy to come on. And
awesome.
Yeah, always a pleasure. I know. We love having you back. Thank you for being our first repeat.
Yeah.
Yay.
Exciting. Hopefully, we'll have you back again in the future as well.
Yeah. Hopefully. Listeners, make sure to go listen to her last episode so you can hear more about her background and Upload, which is a really fun show to talk about too.
Yeah. It's a great show too.
Yeah, I know. I was just catching up on the latest season, so I was thinking of you.
Thank you. And actually, season 3 of that is my favorite season so far. So
yeah,
we're still waiting on here on season 4 whether it's going to happen or not. But
keeping
fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. I know. I've gotten 2 friends to watch it now, and they both love it. So
yeah, it's a good show. It's a good show. Good cast. I've been very fortunate so far in my career. I've, you know, gotten a lot of really good opportunities to work on really great shows with really great people and great cast and great producers. And so no complaints there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so good to hear.
It's rarer than it seems, but it's always really special when you get to do that.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks, listeners. Please, again, just thanks for listening and rate and review us. Leave us comments. I'm sure Farnaz will also love to hear comments from you all. So if you have questions that we didn't cover today, like, feel free to pop in and ask through our Instagram.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode. And thank you, Farnaz. This was great.
Thank you, guys.
Of course. Bye-bye. See you on the next one. Thank you for listening to The Costume Plot. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Costume Plot. If you have a question, comment, or a movie suggestion, you can email us at thecostumeplot@gmail.com.
Our theme music is by Jesse Timp, and our artwork is by Jojo Siu. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts.